You're with RN and A Country Breakfast, Brett Worthington with you. Shortly we'll hear from an economist who argues that while farmers are great at adopting new technology in their paddocks, there's still plenty of scope to bring that innovation into their finances. And we're also going to cast our minds back to 1996. It was a time when this was making its mark in the music charts. All right, that's enough of that. It was also a year when frozen sheep embryos first came into Australia.
There's a lot of areas in Australia where some of these other breeds have taken over and have actually changed the whole economic status of those areas. I know there's friends of mine in Western New South Wales which basically were going broke, and now they're actually travelling really, really well using some of these new breeds.
From virtual fences to drones dropping predatory bugs onto crops, Australian farmers are increasingly adopting new technology. But experts say farming innovation doesn't need to just happen in the paddocks, and they point to crowdfunding as just one of the raft of options available to finance new ventures. It's a topic close to the heart of Dr. Daniel Terrell. He grew up on a farm near Rutherglen in northeastern Victoria. These days, he's an economist with Deloitte, which was recently commissioned to look at how innovation can be further applied to the rural sector. He explained those opportunities to Michael Kavanagh.
Mining in Australia certainly did innovate. In fact, that was a big part of the reason we had a mining boom when a lot of other nations on Earth with lots of minerals didn't. The difference there is mining had scale. Australian agriculture doesn't. So what was economical for a multi-million dollar mining company to invest in innovation is not necessarily an economic consideration for a lot of small-scale Australian farms, which are typically family farming. Expensive machinery might be seen as risky, it might have a very long payback period, and frankly the commercial reality of such investments might not add up. So traditional sort of models of ownership and I must own everything I use may have to be challenged if agriculture is going to adopt some of these innovations, given the scale that most Australian farms operate at.
How much too has innovation been held back in Australia by just the lack of investment? We've got these massive super funds, but they look at the services industry and that area because there is the long lead for a return.
There is a very long lead for a return. There's other reasons why investment in Australian agribusiness is perhaps not matching that. We're getting a lot of interest from foreign investment at the moment, so much so, in fact, we're knocking some back. But the equivalent level of interest from Australian funds just doesn't seem to be there. There's a few reasons for that. One is agribusiness investments have perhaps copped a bit of a bad rap over the years. There's some seen as a tax break. There's obviously failed timber investments. It's not always been seen as a great vehicle to invest in. There's also the unique characteristics of Australian agri and its volatility. So investors don't like risk and uncertainty. Unfortunately, Australian agri comes with more of that than most other places in the world. That's fine for a foreign investor who's already diversified around the world, can take on that risk. If we're talking about a smaller Australia investor, the variability in Australian agri does pose some challenges.
In the area of innovation and making it more profitable and that growth area and also productivity-wise, at the same time, can you see a growth in employment in the area of agriculture with innovation, or in fact, will it actually see even a lessening of employment and possibly therefore a greater drift to the cities?
Our forecast, we certainly see good prospects for Australian agri in an economic growth sense, so that's increased output, increased productivity. For employment, though, it's not quite so rosy because a lot of the innovation we're talking about actually replaces labour with machinery or some other input. So while that's good for the bottom line, it can be shedding employment. The thing to keep in mind there is that innovation in ag might not grow employment in ag in a traditional sense, but it will create need for people to do other things elsewhere in the economy. So all part of broader agribusiness, even if it's not the traditional employment we've had on Australian farms.
We see innovation and we think high tech, such things as driverless tractors and what have you, and we're seeing the growth of drones and being specialised in agriculture. But in fact, something that a lot of people probably haven't thought about as a real positive is virtual fencing. You see from your research that as being a huge plus.
Oh, absolutely, because Australia's a sparse place. Our agriculture is not particularly intensive by global standards. That means fencing traditional wires and posts is a very big cost as a proportion of production in Australia. The ability to do that without the fixed capital poses advantages much more for Australia than it does for our competitors overseas. It allows livestock farming and to be livestock to be contained in certain areas, obviously making it easier to keep them, you know, within the boundaries of a farm or within a certain area. But even more exciting is the potential to use virtual fencing in an active sense. So change where that fence is without having to physically move anything can be a means to herd up livestock in remote areas that otherwise can be quite expensive and risky to muster.
Farming in Australia still is predominantly family orientated, and you're talking about innovation in being able to raise the finances, because you're talking about GPS tracking, the virtual fences. They're not cheap, and it's only really once huge demand comes in that those prices go down. You mentioned things such as crowdfunding as innovation. Do you see, therefore, that possibly the traditional areas of banking are going to be pushed away from farming because they're more interested in the big dollars of the service industries?
No, we wouldn't see crowdfunding replacing traditional banking. Rather, we'd expect it to, or we see it working alongside it, to fund things that the banks might not otherwise fund. The reason why crowdsourcing is so attractive is that everyone has different values, different objectives, different things they want to achieve with their funds. It allows those potential investors to be matched up with the quite unique circumstances of different Australian farms, so the two can come together. So whereas the banks might not be seeing an investment as a particularly good commercial proposition, it doesn't mean that groups of people around Australia agree.
As an economist who grew up on a farm, it's identifying of trends. Is the innovation such that we've had other industry going out and they identify trends? We're talking about the growth in Asia, about the need for protein, but how much does the consumer also drive those trends, and therefore the potential innovators, are they watching what the consumer is wanting enough?
I think they'll have to, because some of these innovations in fact depend upon providing the consumer with what they want. So we're talking crowdsourcing. You won't have any hope at all of getting crowdfunding unless your audience sees a value proposition for them, and that can't be done in absence of what the consumer wants. And similarly with the regional biomarkers is another example. It really is giving authenticity to claims that the consumer would like to know and values. So be it region of production, be it the green credentials of production, or whether it was socially responsible production and the like, all these considerations now are quite new that didn't have to be attached to food like it does today.
Dr. Daniel Terrell is an economist with Deloitte. He was speaking there with Michael Kavanagh. This is A Country Breakfast on RN. Brett Worthington with you this morning. Well, it's been 20 years since the first frozen sheep embryos were brought into Australia from South Africa. There are up to 20,000 embryos in that first import from a whole range of breeds that are now commonplace today. And as Tyne Logan reports, it's changed the Australian sheep industry as we know it.
1996 was a big year. Los Del Rio released the Blue Light Disco favourite, the Macarena. The world said goodbye to Singing in the Rain actor Gene Kelly. And it was also the year the state of the Australian sheep industry changed significantly.
Project started in 1994. A couple of chaps from Australia, a chap called Peter Cook, who's a farmer in South Australia, and Stan Dorman, who's a farmer in WA, both pretty smart, innovative characters, decided to import genetics out of South Africa. That all started in 94. They formed a group, and basically they put together a project to bring five breeds into Australia from South Africa, and those breeds were the Dorper, Damra, the South African Mutton Merino, as it was known back then, a Merino, and also a Boer Goat as well. So I think first lambs were born in May 1996.
20 years ago, sheep embryo exporter and vet Adrian Veach was involved in bringing the first frozen sheep embryos into Australia. Although international movement of frozen sheep embryos had been done elsewhere, Adrian Veach says this was likely the world's first big shipment. And he says the Australian sheep industry would not be what it is today without it.
Back then, I think merinos were probably 90%, maybe even more, of our population. Basically, Australia's been based on the wool on wool for years and years. And we had a few meat breeds like Poll Dorsets, White Suffolks, Suffolks, and a few other minor breeds. But yeah, it was pretty well merinos. So before that, you had to bring them in. They had to go into long-term isolation in quarantine. Became very, very expensive and took a long time to do. And this one, in 1994, there was a negotiation between the importers and Aquis, and they allowed us to do a quality assurance program where myself as a private contractor could do all the veterinary work, and we had audits four times a year where they'd come and sit with me for a week or 2 weeks and make sure all my records were intact and everything was done properly.
What do you think the Australian sheep industry would look like now had this not happened?
Like, the Australian sheep industry is still merino based, but there's a lot of areas in Australia where some of these other breeds have taken over and have actually changed the whole economic status of those areas. I know there's friends of mine in Western New South Wales which basically were going broke, and now they're actually travelling really, really well using some of these new breeds. And the breed, some of the breeds actually got a real niche in this country. And if you have a look in, say, most of the rural magazines now, you'll see some of these breeds represented regularly, especially the Dorpers, the Sams. The Doonies weren't in this project, but they were just not long after. The Damras probably have run their race a little bit, but yeah, no, the breeds have actually been very, very good for the country so far.
So do you think it's a good thing that Australia moved from a very dominant merino-based industry to, having their foot in a couple more doors like Dorper and the Sams?
Yeah, I think having a choice is always an option. The good merino people will always run merinos and do very well out of them. There's other people who want to run other breeds. In the early days, there was a lot of negative. Like, if you owned a Dorper or a Damra, you almost was like sacrilege. You shouldn't have them here. But over time, that's changed. And I think most breeders now, regardless of what breed they're in, we're probably in the sheep industry, and our biggest competition in Australia, or especially Western Australia, is probably cropping.
How far advanced was this technology at the time?
It was pretty good, but it was still early days in it all. Doing big projects, it was a new thing. We'd done smaller projects, but nothing to this size. So it was a bit of sort of hope it works sort of thing at some stages, but in general, it worked really well. And as much as the technology's changed a little bit, it's probably very, very similar to what we were doing back then.
So this project brought in five new breeds, some of which are major breeds in Australia now. Do you think there's room for any more major breeds to come into Australia?
There seems to be a few niche breeds coming in. I think we've probably got in the country what we're going to use. I know there's a lot of composites of the breeds that we've brought in, which are doing quite well. And people will chop and change and develop a breed that suits their environment and their management skills. So I always say every sheep's got a place. It just depends on how you manage it and what your skill level is and what your environment is.
Well, this project clearly had a major impact on Australia. Do you think there's any lessons that can be learned, or leaves from the history book that we can apply to nowadays?
It's interesting. Probably my biggest thing is animals actually perform differently under different environments. The best sheep in South Africa aren't necessarily the best sheep here. There's a big correlation between your environment and what type of sheep will survive. They're the best. So just because you buy the best sheep in, say, South Africa, it doesn't necessarily mean it'll be the best here.
Next time you hear Singing in the Rain or the Macarena, you might think of the sheep industry. Tyne Logan with that report. That's a Country Breakfast for this week. Special thanks to Tim Simons for technical production. If you like the show but find 6 o'clock a bit tough, you can subscribe to our podcast via the podcast app, or you can listen anytime on the ABC Radio player. And if you want more information, you can always head to the RN homepage, and you can find a Country Breakfast under the Programs tab. I'm Brett Worthington. Plenty of great listening ahead here on RN.